You know, ultimately, you are in charge. It is your business. It is your assets. But you need to be able to delegate and kind of step back and focus more on areas that need improvement, as opposed to just doing everything yourself.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Anton Ivanov is a U.S. Navy veteran, a real estate investor, entrepreneur, and founder of RentCast.io and DealCheck.io. Anton, welcome back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Great to be here, as always.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine, Anton. I didn't look it up here ahead of time. I can't remember. It's been a couple of years since the last time you were on the show. So it's great to have you come back on. I don't remember the episode number, so here maybe we'll include that there in the show notes in case you want to go back and kind of hear Anton's first podcast with us, where he breaks down a lot of the ways he built his business and some really other cool things that he's done there in his real estate investing career, which we're not going to really get into too much today. However, Anton, for every guest who comes on the show, even returning guests, there are still three questions I ask them in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Absolutely. So we started investing, me and my wife, about it's been about 10 years now going on that. We actually started very small. We started with house hacking. You know, we bought one duplex that we lived in one of the units, rented out the other. We moved on to some out-of-state turnkey investing in single-family properties. And then most recently, we were buying commercial multifamily in commercial and like fourplex residential multifamily in Kansas City, Missouri. So we've had kind of a very more slower growth, I like to say, but it was more manageable. It helped us make, you know, some smaller mistakes, learn from them, and then move on to bigger deals over the years. And we've covered a lot of this with you, Sam, on the last podcast. So again, I'm a big proponent of kind of not jumping into necessarily the biggest deals, if you prefer starting smaller and learn from that. We've been super happy with that lately, and kind of what I wanted to focus on this show, we've spent a lot of time on focusing on improving our operations, and kind of increasing the cash flow of the existing units we've had. We have 42 units right now spread out across three places: Atlanta, San Diego, and then the bulk of our portfolio is in Kansas City, Missouri. Just the market recently has been a little bit tougher. You know, obviously we have still prices are pretty up there. They haven't softened up as I would have expected them by now. And then the rates are high. It's just kind of a tougher environment, in my opinion, for acquiring new rentals. So I think it's a great time to focus on operations, because I think it's oftentimes neglected by some investors that just kind of focus on more and more deals, more and more units in their portfolio. But I think you can get a great ROI in your time and kind of effort by just focusing on what you already have.
Man, there's a lot to be said for that. And I look forward to jumping in to getting kind of some nitty and gritty details on how you guys have done this. I guess before we get into that, though, 42 units spread completely across the country. I mean, Atlanta, Kansas City, San Diego. And if you are managing operations, it sounds like you're self-managing these properties.
So no, and actually that takes me straight into our first point is, I look at, when you're first starting investing in real estate, you're kind of more, I would say, boots on the ground. You're more involved, especially with acquisition and management. I think it's important as you transition to larger volumes of units, 10, 20, 40 like us units, especially if they're spread out across the country. I think at that point, you kind of stop being maybe like the workhorse of your business, of your real estate, venture empire, if you would, and you kind of start to become the CEO, right? Where you're, ultimately you are in charge. It is your business. It is your assets. But you need to be able to delegate and kind of step back and focus more on areas that need improvement, as opposed to just doing everything yourself. So one of my, first tips for kind of improving operations at scale, again, is not necessarily doing it yourself, but finding professional property managers. So we've used professional management for all of our units. Funny thing is, when we bought that duplex that we house hacked, that was our first property that we bought, we used the property manager for the upstairs unit, even though we lived in the building. And it sounds kind of stupid, maybe silly, like, hey, why didn't you just manage you're right there, it's the unit above. But I had this vision of kind of growing our portfolio to 40, 50 units. And I wanted to start getting experience with working with property managers, kind of seeing how that plays out, which prepared us to later buy out of state properties that I was not going to manage myself. So I think it's important. You know, I've met folks who self-manage, especially if they're local, the buildings that they own are local. It can work, but I just think it turns into a full-time job very quickly, especially if you have a lot of units. I think you can free up your time. And if you find a good manager, you know, and kind of work with them, right? It's also another thing I would say about property managers. It's not really a give it to them and forget kind of arrangement, which I think some people expect. And, you know, in an ideal world, maybe it would be, but everybody's different. You're different from, you know, Sam, from me, the way you want your units managed. And yes, a property manager has their own like procedures and steps, and they like to do things a certain way. That doesn't mean that you can't go to them and say, hey, look, I know you guys like to do it this way, but here's how kind of I would like to tweak the process. Like, again, you're basically the CEO, you know, they're working for you, you're paying them. And I think as the CEO, you have the full right and kind of not to micromanage them, essentially. Nobody likes that. You know, they don't want you to be there just making every little, you know, second guessing their decision and stuff like that. But no, if you feel like things are not going the right direction, step in there, you know, do a monthly phone call. This is what we do with our property managers, even if things are going smoothly, just to check in, see how things are going, any big issues, anything we should be concerned about, look at trends and let them do the work, especially if you own out-of-state properties.
That's really great advice. And I bet most people don't do that, who are out-of-state owners, is having that monthly check-in.
Yeah.
How do, I mean, and I also wonder if, you know, how did you convince and or get on the calendar of your property manager saying, hey, I want this monthly check-in? Because I bet there's some property managers out there that'd be like, hey, Anton, it's great knowing you, buddy, but I really don't want to spend 20 minutes with you once a month talking about your properties and go away. So how did that conversation
go? Yeah, well, two things. So I think as you, you know, as you scale your portfolio, the more units you own in a certain area, the more units you have each property manager manage, you kind of become a more valued client, right? So if they're just managing one house for you, you're absolutely right. They may just not be inclined to spend as much time with you because you're like one out of 500 or something units. But as your units grow, you have, you know, a dozen, 20, 40 plus units. It becomes much more easier, at least in my experience, to get on their calendar, have them be a little more responsive. And I would take advantage of that. You know, I would, you are a more valued client. They should spend more time with you. So that's kind of one thing. I think it's natural for that to just happen as you grow your portfolio. The second one does come down to property managers and not being able to basically, you know, fire one if it doesn't work out. I had to do this in some of our markets. You know, some property, there's so many property management companies, and some are, like you said, they're just like, they don't really want to like stir the boat. They just kind of want to collect their cut from the rent every month. They don't want to talk to you, you know, like they don't want to talk to the tenants. And in my opinion, those are usually not the best property managers. Like, I don't think, again, a property manager should be like always start, you know, shaking things up, but they should be responsive. Communication is like one of the keys that I always looked in property managers. If your property manager is not responding to your emails, phone calls, whatever, I bet they're not doing that with the tenants also. Like, there's probably some like communication issues with the tenants, and that's what you don't want. Because to me, like how they talk to me is, you know, kind of relates to how they talk to the tenants. And I want a property manager that will talk to the tenants, be responsive, like stay on to date, because that's how you increase tenant satisfaction and retention, which actually takes me to our next point. Very, very nicely is how do you improve operations and kind of efficiency of your portfolio is minimizing vacancy. When you have a portfolio at scale, a large multifamily commercial portfolio, what I've found, and I've talked to a bunch of investors, is vacancy becomes your biggest expense. It's not your taxes, it's not your insurance, it's not your, it's actually vacancy. If you have 40 units and 10 of them are vacant, you know, that's like a 25% reduction in your income. It becomes huge. So focusing on minimizing vacancies, and there's many different aspects to this, right? It's both basically, you know, when you do have vacant units, You need to get efficient at filling them. And this comes down to having a very good unit turn process. You know, you're not like messing around, finding a contractor, doing scopes of work. Like we've got it down to a science where basically we have a portfolio, like our bulk of our portfolio is in Kansas City. We have a standard list. Like I'm like, hey, here's basically a punch list, right? Here's what you go through. We have a standard set of contractors. We already agreed on budget and materials. Like we like to standardize. We paint, like you name it. Like it's such a well-honed process. And again, that's something that's easier to do at scale. You know, if you own a single family here, single family there, it's kind of a little more individual work. Like what does this house need? When you have commercial units, you know, large, especially I've talked to folks that have 100 plus units, right? They're like, I can't be going and doing a personal inspection, or every manager is going to do an inspection. Like have a standard set for how you turn a unit. So when a unit does become vacant, they give you the keys. It's like, boom, we've done the inspection. Boom, we've scheduled the work. We had contractors lined up. You know, week two, it's done. The work is done. We can release it. We already know what we're leasing it for. We already have a kind of a marketing plan. We know where to post these properties. And, you know, the unit is vacant for weeks, you know, 2-3 weeks like max, as opposed to sitting there on the market. Because again, every month that you're not collecting rent, you're losing a ton of money. And it's kind of like a hidden expense, right? It's not like on your operating expenses, on your CapEx or anything. It doesn't show up there. But when you're not collecting rent, that is an expense. So huge, very huge, minimizing vacancies. The other thing I will say, kind of where we started with the whole vacancies, the whole tenant, I call it like tenant retention, right? General concept, but it basically involves keeping tenants happy. It's a multifaceted thing. It's hard to like point it like, hey, do this and your tenants will be happy. But having a good property manager, like we started talking, can go a long way. You know, tenants, in my experience, most of them, like they're not like super picky. Like you'll get one tenant out there that's just kind of a pain in the butt, excuse my language. But most people, you know, if they have an issue, they understand like things break, right? You know, dishwashers break, whatever, garbage disposals break. They just want good communication. And we've heard that time and time again from our tenants. Like they love the fact that, so we have like programs where they can text, they can use a website to submit maintenance requests. Like it's easy to get a hold of our managers, our maintenance departments. And I think that alone can go a long way to like keeping tenants happy and keeping them in your units as opposed to like, you know, always moving out because they just, you know, they ask for something to get fixed and it's been weeks before somebody even called them back. Like that's not the experience you want. So just work with your property manager, establish some programs. They can be very simple. Like you don't have to send them gift cards or like, you know, I've heard like some landlords do like crazy stuff like that. You know, they'll send them a birthday gift, send them a Christmas gift. If you have the capacity and kind of to do that, like, yeah, I think it'll be great. You know, at least a little postcard or something like that. But even just the basics, you know, be responsive. If they have issues, you know, work with them on the issues. Just be reasonable with the tenants. Keep them happy. Put yourself in their shoes. I think that can go a huge way to reducing your vacancies.
You've brought up a lot of things that I would feel are more on the property manager things to do, such as having text messages, you know, hey, I can text and say something broke or this or that. How are you having these discussions with your property managers and saying, hey, these are systems we want to implement?
You're absolutely right. So I'm not doing these myself. I'm not out there like with my phone number giving it to the tenants. No, this is exactly like the first thing. I think, you know, having a good property manager, having a good relationship with your property manager, and then finding one that is willing kind of to work with you if they don't have these systems to implement them. That's like one of the keys. And that's why I started with that as my number one point. A property manager at a scale, like with a larger portfolio, can make or break, you know, your basically success, your long-term cash flow. So again, it's more like an art form. I can't tell you like, hey, you know, go on Yelp or something like that. Look for these keywords, find a property manager. Like it's been like a bit hit or miss for us. You know, we have started with some companies that were doing okay. Then we got to a certain point with kind of our larger volume that we found, hey, you know what? This is just not working. I would say the best thing that helped us was I only find property managers now through referrals. We haven't entered a new market in a while, but I would never like go on Google or Yelp or whatever and just grab a random company. I just think that's, you know, the chances of you finding a really good one are pretty low. I would definitely, if you're in a new market, you've never invested there before, I would try to network and connect with other investors, property groups, like whatever. Find a little circle, you know, a little local meetups, and then ask who they use for property managers. Find out how big their portfolio is. So it kind of matches what you're doing, because again, a property manager who like specializes in single family is going to be different than somebody who manages like 100 plus unit, you know, apartment complexes. Like, you need to find a manager that like fits what you're trying to do. And then again, it's just about establishing a relationship. You know, when you come into it, I would ask them questions like, hey, you know, how open are you guys to doing a phone call with me every month? Like, it's a question that you can easily ask during like your initial vetting process with the property manager. You know, all these questions like, hey, well, how do you guys handle maintenance? Like, is it a website? Is it just a form? Like, do they have to call? So I actually have, I think, like a property manager checklist or interview questionnaire. Maybe we can throw that in the show notes, that like covers a lot of these bases, and it will just should give you a better understanding of how they do things. Because yeah, you want to find a company that already has a lot of this stuff in place, and really good property managers, they do, like, they're not going to be, you know, like set and forget. They will have these programs because it's in their best interest too. Like, the like most property managers don't collect money when the units are vacant. They want to keep the tenants, you know, keep them happy, keep the owners happy. So a good property manager company is probably going to have a lot of this stuff already. It's just, again, a matter of finding one, which is not easy, but it is possible.
Right. No, I love it. That's very, very helpful. Finding a property manager, I think you said it, but just to recap, but finding the property manager that matches the property type you're looking for them.
Exactly.
And has experience in that, because there's, like you said, it's a wildly different skill set for a 100 or 200 unit apartment complex than it is
perfect.
For
yes,
100 single family home spread around the city. So that's really, really helpful. Can I go back to the vacancy?
Yeah.
The first thing that you hit on as a way to, you know, improve operations. And of course, you know, I also like what you said there when you said that, hey, you know, if you're not collecting rent, it doesn't show up as an expense, other than your top line revenue number is smaller, but there's not
exactly
a number, there's not like a line item says, hey, you didn't collect rent and here's how much money you lost.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of helpful, I would think.
Yeah. Well, we tend to put it up higher, like before the operating expenses, right on the, like the net NOI worksheet. So,
right.
Yeah.
Somehow it needs to be like above the top line. Like, here's your minus for all your vacancy.
Right.
But anyway, I digress. The question I had for you outside of, you know, quick turnovers. That sounded like one thing that you said that you guys are really, really honing in on, is if you have a turnover,
it's
done very, very efficiently. What else are you doing on that front in order to, and of course, you know, your second comment, which was retention, which is also, you know, part and parcel of minimizing vacancy, is keeping the tenants that you have.
Yep.
Is there anything else on that minimization of vacancy that you guys are actively doing that maybe our listeners can employ?
Yeah, I would say, and kind of this, I actually had a third point that this will take us in there nicely. Okay. So this is more on the retention side. So again, keeping the tenants happy with simple things like communication, maintenance. The other thing where I think landlords struggle, and we have to, is the whole like lease renewal and rent, like where to keep the rent. Because, you know, yeah, if the tenant is happy, a lot of times though, it still comes down to what do you charge them in rent? You know, if you're like overcharging them way above market, they're going to shop around, they're going to move. Right. So, but where do you do it? Or I've met landlords that are like on the opposite. They'll be like, I haven't raised rent for this tenant in 10 years, you know, and I'm happy and they're happy. I think, you know, with that, there's a medium right there. So, my philosophy is I do want my portfolio to kind of keep track with the market rents, right, over a long period of time. So I'm not a big proponent of not raising rent for tenants for like decades. It's just, I think there's really no reason to do that. Yes, maybe you'll lose some absolutely exceptional tenants, but if you actually do the math of how much rental, potential rental income you lost over the course of whatever, 5-10 years, you didn't raise the rent on them, even if you factor you'll have a turnover on the new tenant, it will work out better in your favor, in my opinion. You know, right? It comes down to a little bit into like your personal philosophy and all that stuff. But just mathematically, I think you'll do better to keep track with the market rents for your portfolio overall. Now, what we tend to do for our own portfolio is we would be a little more aggressive when leasing new units, right? So if we have a vacant unit, we'll do a market analysis. Now, by the way, I'll do a self, plug here. So we have a rentcast.io platform. You go on rentcast.io, you don't need an account. If you have a residence, so it's currently only for residential properties like apartment complexes. We don't quite support industrial or warehouse or retail on the commercial side yet. But if you have residential, you know, both small multifamily and larger commercial properties, you can plug in an address, you know, the property size type, and it will give you a rental analysis, like a rental CMA report with what the rent should be, what are the rental comps and stuff like that. So there's like really no excuse with today's tech is where I'm getting to with not knowing what the, you know, current market rents are. And a good property manager should have a ping on that as well. Like they should know, you know, what kind of properties would rent for. So basically when we're leasing new units, you know, we already had a vacancy. We did a turn, especially if it was kind of like a, you know, a decent rehab, it's in good shape. We'll be a little more aggressive, meaning like we'll list it pretty close to what we think market rent is, maybe a little bit under, but it'll be like pretty up there. And, you know, we'll kind of judge rental demand. Obviously, that's another thing with kind of working with your leasing agent for minimizing turnover is like, I've seen property managers that will just throw a rental number on there. Like they think it should rent for, I don't know, $1,200. And then they'll list it and then it's like crickets and they just keep the listing on and they keep the listing on. Maybe they get one showing like, no, like we tell the leasing agents like, hey, if you list it for a week, you should get like at least 5-10 showings, whatever it is, depending on the year, like you should get interest. If you're not, then it's too high. Like it's as simple as that. It's not like your pictures are, you know what I'm saying? Cause markets also change so rapidly. Like you can look at long-term trends, which we show on the Rentcast website. You can actually look at like zip code and where the rents are going, but they change like too quickly. They're seasonal, you know, there'll be less demand in the winter. Like for example, around the holidays, usually nobody's moving. Then there's like more demand, like in the summer when people tend to move, right? So you just have to be like really on it. Your leasing agents should be, not necessarily you personally, but just do little adjustments and then you get more showings. You fill kind of the vacancy. So we're a little more aggressive on the leasing of new units. We're a little less aggressive on renewing leases. So we typically do 1-year leases, sometimes two, but we'll kind of look at the tenant and if they're paying, that they're good. If their rent is kind of pretty close, like if it's a new tenant, maybe they leased a year ago, sometimes we'll skip a year. We just won't even do an increase. I'm not a big fan of like just doing $50 a year, every year, like something regular. We will actually see what they're paying, what their history is, what would we lease that unit for if it was like, you know, vacant, if we just did market rent. And if it's within like 10 to 12%, I mean like 10 to 15, even sometimes 20% within market, we will leave it alone. We will maybe bump it up, but we will kind of always trail the market rent on lease renewals basically by about like 15%, sometimes even more for good tenants. So we'll kind of keep it up, but we will be much less aggressive. And that kind of gives you a spread. Because if that tenant was to go and be like, you know what, they gave me a little increase, like, I don't know, $100, $150 a month. And what are they going to do? Like, think about it. They're going to go and shop, right? First, they're going to be like, you know what, I don't want to pay more because it's like human nature. Why would I pay more? They'll go do a market analysis for the same kind of unit type that they're in. And if the market rent is really like 10, 15% higher, they probably won't really find anything that is better than what they're paying. And they'll be like, well, I guess, you know, it's inflation and, you know, people expect rent increases, right? They just don't want to be in the position where like, you know, they feel like you're overcharging them. So if they go and they find a bunch of other units for leasing for less, or maybe they're just better conditioned leasing for the same. So just put yourself in the tenant's position. Again, my preferred strategy, a little more aggressive on vacant units, a little less aggressive on existing tenants and lease increases. But find a strategy that works for you. Communicate that to your property manager. Like your property manager should be on it. It shouldn't be like, oh, what should I lease this unit? Like we have a process. So like go to Rentcast or whatever platform they like to use, you know, find the rent estimates, you know, look at the tenant. Is this a lease renewal? Is this a new tenant? Right. Like have kind of almost like a workflow checklist, whatever that you know, that they know, but let them do it, you know, once they're comfortable with. And we had great success with this. Like we got our leasing agents and they like it too, by the way. Like you know, property managers do like systems. They have a lot of units. They don't want to be overthinking too, but if you get them on a system, I actually found that they're very responsive to it, provided it's like overall a good company. Like they're, you know, they're honest. They want to work. They like these systems. They like that, like, hey, I do this and my owner is happy. The tenants are happy. Like we're done. You know, it's, I've haven't had personally issues once you kind of get them on board with that.
Man, that's great. So we got three action items here in order to, and it all comes, well, you know, one is minimize vacancy. Two is retain the existing tenants that you have. And then three is inside of retaining those existing tenants. You know, it's paying really close attention to how your units are priced and when, who the tenant is that's currently there and, or if it is a unit that you're filling. So that's really, really helpful. What has been your, I know you'd mentioned this maybe off air and maybe you'd mention it on air, but I think you told me that there was a certain percentage that you've really increased the top line revenue to your business without adding more units with here, just implementing this strategy.
Yeah, I think I haven't like done the math exactly today, but I think over the last, so we haven't bought new units, I think for 2 years, and it's primarily because of COVID and kind of the market was really up there, you know, with the prices, then the rates started going up. So we've really focused on operations because I feel like as a real estate investor, you always should be focusing on something. Again, like you're the CEO, like you shouldn't be just sitting around, you know, collecting your paycheck, which is nice, but and a great time if you feel like the market is a bit saturated, you know, not the best interest rate environment, focus on operations. We've grown our top line revenue and our cash flow because of that by over 20% by doing these tips. Wow. So by focusing on vacancies, working with our property managers, you know, kind of really keeping up with market rents, I think over the last couple of years, we've increased cash flow by over 20% without buying a single unit. And I think unless you're like really on what we just talked about, probably almost any investor, any building, any asset can use something from that. And these are just like a few tips. You know, there's obviously like cutting costs and improving your like maintenance and all that stuff that you can get into. But I would basically look at your, you know, your profit and loss for each asset or for your whole portfolio and just work through every number. Like it starts with rent, then it's your vacancies, you know, then you jump into your expenses. And just look at, you know, criticize every number, like, you know, can I increase this number? You know, if it's rent, can I decrease this expense number? Like scrutinize, like just brainstorm. It's actually kind of cool and like fun, in my opinion. Like you'll be surprised. Like we've even, this is kind of a little offside, but we've done like things like we went to our utility provider for trash, like for trash collection. We said like, hey, we have all these units, like we have 30 plus units you guys are servicing. Can we get like a 20% discount? And I don't think we got 20%, but we got like 15% discount for like no reason. Like it's just a matter of just, you know, just asking for it, just brainstorming it, increase your top line or decrease your expenses and just see your cash flow, you know, balloon without actually increasing units. And then you can apply this over and over again to new units you buy down the road. So it's like you're setting your current portfolio up for success, but you're also preparing to basically maximize the profit and cash flow of future acquisitions, which I think is huge, especially like, you know, if the environment of the market is a little more tougher and maybe investors are passing over these buildings because they're like, hey, the numbers don't really work. You can look at them and you'll be like, you know what? I can make this work because I have this whole toolkit for improving my income and reducing my expenses.
Anton, thank you for taking the time to come back on the show today. This was certainly insightful. I love the way you guys think about property management, how you interface with your property managers. Again, you've given us several just awesome, very, you know, tangible action item steps that we can take here. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So check out our, I already mentioned our rentcast.io platform. Great for looking up rents and tracking your portfolio. We also have our dealcheck.io platform. That's for property analysis on new acquisitions. And if you want to get a hold of me, just send me an email to anton@rentcast.io. I actually reply. I get a ton of emails, but I reply to all of them. Just may take me some time. If you have questions about our software or about real estate, feel free to hit me up.
Fantastic. We'll include that there in the show notes.
Anton@rentcast.io.
Anton@rentcast.io. I know I was messing that up somewhere.
That's
Anton,
okay.
Thank you again for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor,
And subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.